Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO and co-founder of Employee Cycle, and you know us, your all-in-one HR analytics dashboard, allowing you to view, track, share, and analyze all your people data from all your different systems. That's right. Just simply come to our website, sign up for an account, and connect your HRIS, ATS, engagement system, performance, Glassdoor, all the things into this dashboard so that anytime somebody ever asks you for headcount, diversity, engagement, performance numbers, promotion velocity, all the things that are so important to your job, and you say, oh, I have to get back to you, and maybe you don't get back for 2 weeks or 2 months, well, now you have no excuse because you can use Employee Cycle to keep track of all your people metrics in one place, and you can create a free account. That's right, free. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle because we have an awesome guest today, and I would like for you to help me welcome to the podcast Emily Bermes, CEO of Emily Bermes and Associates. And today we're going to talk about how to communicate bad news to employees. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Welcome. Pleasure to be here, Bruce. Thanks.
Awesome. So, Emily, not sure if you've ever listened to a podcast of ours before, but the question that we always lead with is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
That is a great question. So I did work briefly in HR right after college, but I actually sort of went a circuitous route through into the HR world. So after graduate school, I actually ran a large program at a university, at a state school here. And in that role, I had, 40 direct reports, 40 faculty reporting to me, a large program. And with that role came a tremendous amount of HR opportunities. And because it was really, I did all the hiring, all the discipline. It was just a big part of my role. And so while I was at the university, I was on a research track and wasn't super happy with working on the research side of the org. So I switched over to the consulting side. So I just fairly shortly after grad school just got into consulting and fell in love with it. And the longer I was in HR consulting, the more in love with the field I became and the more sort of frustrated with university bureaucracy I also became. So at some point I had a pretty large practice and a full-time job. And at some point I just kind of had to say, okay, pick a world that you want to live in. So I've been consulting now for 19 years, so almost 20 years. So it's been a long love affair with the work.
And what does your consulting firm do?
We're generally a management consulting firm. So we do a lot of things that other folks do. We spend, probably 40% of our time conducting executive assessments. So I would interview folks that are near that executive to assess where they're shining in that role, where their weaknesses or opportunities are, what they might need to do behaviorally to be fully successful in that role, or even what they may need to do to be easily promotable to prepare them for promotion. So I've got a tremendously talented coaching team that actually does the heavy lifting of getting that behavior to change. So the executive development is probably 40% of our firm. Another 40% would be executive onboarding. So when we get an executive in a new role, so we're looking usually VP through CEO, we do some things to just support that transition. What we've learned is about 40 to 50% of the time those folks fail if they're not properly supported. But if you just provide a couple of tools to them to help them kind of assimilate to the culture, understand the charter, gel with their team, that success rate goes up to about 98%. So that's the other 40%. And then the other, whatever percentage is left is, team development, culture shaping, a hodgepodge of other things that folks just need help with.
Awesome. Thank you for that background. So today our topic is how to communicate bad news to employees, which I think is going to be so fun. But before we actually talk about how to communicate bad news, can you briefly tell me and the audience, what do you consider bad news?
Oh, bad news is in the eye of the receiver, right? It's whatever's going to
feel
bad.
Yep, that's what I asked.
Yeah. I mean, I think bad news can be anything from, I'm giving you some constructive feedback on, how you handle the situation or a meeting. You know, people don't really love critical feedback. Most people accept it, but it's not easy for anyone and it makes people uncomfortable. So, you know, what we all want is to be good. We all want to be good enough, right? That's what everybody wants. So when we're receiving feedback that something that we did wasn't good enough, most people feel hurt by that. It doesn't feel great, right? We go home and feel like, oh, okay. So that can be bad news. I think bad news can be, you know, about not getting a promotion. It can be about not inheriting maybe another function that you'd like to bring into your empire. It can be layoffs, right? Yeah, we're doing some downsizing and some of your people may be impacted. You might be impacted. I mean, these are all of these are difficult conversations for most people to have. No one really enjoys these conversations. And yet they're absolutely critical to the performance of the business and to, in a weird way, taking care of the people that we have to give the bad news to. It's information that they need. So we can't really avoid it, right? Although people do. So yeah, those are the kinds of things that I would consider bad news for folks. Just things that are disappointing or hurtful or scary, like downsizing. That's scary.
So if I took a stab at categorizing what may be three of the most common types of bad news, which are constructive criticism, potentially not meeting expectations, and layoffs, would I be correct in those categories?
Yeah, I would also say a loss of opportunity, right? People not getting their way. So if I'm up for promotion or I want a transfer or I want to change something, maybe I've had a flexible work from home schedule and now you're changing that. Like anything in that category is going to be just things that are disappointing to people or scary. Yeah. But you've got it about right. The criticism, the layoffs, although recently, because the economy has been pretty good, I'm not seeing a ton of that right now. But also just, you know, the loss of opportunity, I think, would be maybe the third category.
Okay. So let's spend some time going through each of these and let's have some fun with this.
Okay.
Let's start off with constructive criticism. A lot of people in the corporate world have used the analogy of the shit sandwich.
Yeah.
Or constructive criticism, where I tell you something bad, and then I tell you something good to perk you up, and then I tell you something bad. Or people have done the reverse, where it's, hey, you know you've been here for a long time. You've been doing great. Hey, you're terrible at this. Hey, but you know what? You're still great. And so I would love to get your opinion on those two strategies, and let's really dig into how constructive is constructive criticism.
Yeah. So I actually just did a video blog about this exact topic. Maybe that's how we ended up talking about it. But yeah, I don't like, I've heard that called build, brick, build. I build you up, I hit you with a brick, and then I build you back up in the end. Like, other shit sandwich works too. But yeah, I actually don't care for that for a couple reasons. I mean, one, there isn't anybody that's listening to this podcast that didn't learn that theory in college, right? We all saw it in the textbooks that that's the right way to give the feedback. So we're all kind of wise to it. And it's just like the concept where, you know, some people will like say your name 100 times in a conversation to make you feel special or something. That's another thing I've seen sort of thrown around. Once people understand that that's something that they've been taught, it can feel pretty disingenuous. And I am a really big proponent of people being genuine and real with each other. So to me, it feels kind of fake and forced. So here's my theory on what people want. I think people want the truth, even if they don't like it. I think people are mostly grownups, depending on the day. Most of them can handle like, hey, quick feedback on this meeting. You know, the way you handled the boss and that's just going to drive him crazy. You've got to not do it that way. Here's a better way to do it. Like, just give it to people straight. I do feel like depending on the severity of the feedback, right? If it's just quick negative feedback, people aren't going to have a big cow about it. But if it's, you know, if it's pretty serious, you know, pretty serious performance issues and people are going to be more emotional, more invested, more upset, if they feel like they're being put on a performance improvement, you know, plan, then, you know, those are going to be more upsetting conversations. So I think if you feel like it's going to be really upsetting to the person, it's worth acknowledging them, right? So this is what I want to acknowledge is going really well. This is what's not going well. Let's, you know, work to figure out how we can improve that so that you want to have some balance. But I think when you stage it in a, hey, buddy, doing a great job. Hey, buddy, you know, you're not like, I think people can see right through that. And I think often too, people are doing that not because maybe they don't think the person can handle it, but people don't want to upset other people because then guess what? You have an upset person that you have to deal with. And I think people are more worried about upsetting someone because they are not going to like how it feels to have upset that person. And so, you know, I think that's why we go to these strategies, that it's to make us feel better. It's not to make the other person feel better. I don't think it really works. So to me, direct, straight to the point, not sugarcoating it. You don't want the message to get lost in your, you know, in your fluffing out the, right, the conversation. You don't want the meaning to get lost. Simple, direct, honest. And then, you know, if there's any point that something you can acknowledge, like, I know you've already worked really hard on this and I appreciate that, but we're not there yet. Like, you know, if you can acknowledge the person in a sincere way, I think that goes off way better than any of these tactics.
Who's responsible for training employees on how to perform these good constructive criticism sessions? Is this HR's responsibility? Is this hiring managers or managers of managers? Who should this fall on? Is it a combination of both? What does this look like?
I think it's everybody. I think HR tends to be more responsible for these kind of things because HR people tend to have a stronger capacity with these skills, and we're here to help our business partners, you know, grow in these, you know, quote, soft skills. Like, yes, that's our job. And it's the hiring manager's job. And it's everyone's job, because it's something that's so fundamentally uncomfortable, and people shy away from these courageous conversations so much that I feel like everyone's got to be pushing for this. Leaders have to be modeling this, right? This is, you know, it, by doing it for their people, and then their people see a good model for, oh, okay, that's how she does it. Okay, that worked okay. I'll try that. So I think it's everyone's job to teach it, reinforce it. And by the way, it's also the people who are getting the feedback's responsibility to handle it like grownups, because, you know, we can train people not to give us feedback. So if you get, so you say you gave me feedback, if I'm emotional enough or angry enough, like if I make it really hard, if I make that a really exceptionally uncomfortable experience for you, then I'm training you not to give me more feedback because I made it painful. Right. So it's the people getting the feedback also, they have to model, you know, maturity and say, okay, you know, let me know more about that. Help me understand, you know, what do you think I could do to do things differently? If you need to go home and cry or have a martini, that's fine. But you've got to make it fairly pleasant to be given feedback or people will stop. So I'd say that's what I mean. It's everybody's job to help these conversations go well.
Interesting. All right, let's now move to layoffs. How do you communicate layoffs? We've all watched movies like Office Space and other funny movies where people will come up to you and say you lost your job, but try to make you feel good about it as if that's what you wanted to happen. Other people will be very somber and sad and say, oh, we can't believe this happened, but this is the way you need to go. But be excited with your offboarding company because they're going to really help you find a new opportunity. What should this look like? What does it look like today, do you think, for most companies? And then what should it look like?
I'm not sure, because honestly, these are not conversations I get invited into. I deal with people when they're on their way in and up in the organization, not when they're on their way out. But here's my opinion about just the tactics that I've seen. I think one, you know, there is a way that organizations need to have a sense of timing about these things. Like, people have to have the plan in place. They know what they're doing before it can get communicated. And our world is so small. Everyone is a text message away. You can't keep information under wraps for too long. So I'd say it's good when organizations can move swiftly to decision, because every conversation is one more opportunity for one text message to get sent. And once it goes outside the walls of the people making the decisions, you can't get it back. It's on social media. It's everywhere. It's on IMs. So organizations, I think, need to be conscious of moving very quickly and trying to keep it under wraps, because it makes people nervous. I think, you know, I think it's really disingenuous to try to get people to be excited about being laid off. I mean, I think organizations, you know, layoffs have to happen. I mean, I live in the real world too, but, you know, they need to be conscious that, you know, not everyone, and the unfortunate piece is often the people making the layoffs are in a better financial, socially secure kind of place. They may have more education. They've probably got more experience than those people that they're laying off. So they really have to look those folks through the lens of, if I was at that income level, how would that hit me? If I had, you know, that much experience, if I was at that stage, you know, I still had young kids at home, or, you know, you've got to really put yourself in those other people's shoes, not because you want to cheerlead them and be like, isn't this great? But because you want to be decisive and swift and clear and direct. And you want to do it with some sense of empathy that this is really hard, right? Acknowledge that it's really hard. This is scary stuff for people. I mean, I grew up in a household, my dad was laid off, oh my gosh, like 5 times a year, I feel like it was all the time. That's really disruptive for families. So I think just having, you know, without them making the company wrong for doing it, acknowledge on a human level that it's difficult. And then it's a good time to bring in, now these are the resources that we're going to, you know, give you to help you be okay. So this is your severance package. This is your outplacement. This is your, you know, whatever the company is going to do. It's here's the bad news. I acknowledge, you know, the impact that this is having on you, you know, and it's scary. And here's what we're going to do to help. And then leave it at that. Answer questions that they may have and, you know, straight and simple.
Got it. As you were talking, I was thinking about the movie Up in the Air with George Clooney. Did you see that?
Mm-mm.
So it was a really good movie. The gist is George Clooney works for this outplacement company. For those of you who don't know what an outplacement company is, it's a company that helps businesses or any type of organization with helping all of their employees who were recently laid off find new opportunities or get back on their feet. And George Clooney's role was to travel around the country and just fire people.
Oh, wow.
And it was a terrible job.
Terrible yeah, job. That's awful.
But one of the things that I thought about in his role was that he would tell everyone together, he would give them this big public speech in the lobby or a big conference room, and then meet with everyone individually to then give them their package and tell them what was going on. So my question to you is, when it comes to things like layoffs that are probably the worst thing you could tell anybody at a job, do you think this, because as you said, people are a text message away, or it's not like you're going to be able to keep it to themselves, people might flip out, who knows? Do you think in one fall, quick swoop, you should tell everyone at the same time and then talk to people individually? Or is it still too much of a private matter that should be dealt with on a individual and personalized case-by-case scenario from the beginning?
That's a great question. There's two ways. It's like on the one, there's two sides to the answer, so I'm not sure. But on the one hand, first of all, if I'm going to get fired or laid off, I would love George Clooney to do that to me. So that'd be great. It's going to come from anybody better him, right? But no, I think, you know, the risk of doing it all at once is that it feels really impersonal. And like people are going to be really weird about like, why are we all in this room together? Why is he here and she's here? And oh, we're all kind of the bottom tier players. Like, I don't know. I think that'd be a little bit weird for people. But if you do it one by one, you know, at least the person hears it direct from what I think should be either their direct manager, probably in concert with their HR consultant, because, you know, if you get them all in a room, yes, everybody knows at once, but I think that that's really impersonal. And I think they would rather hear it not from an external person, but from an internal person that they know cares about them, respects them, wants the best for them. I think it'd be received better that way. I almost feel like if the news comes as such a shock in a big group, they might like just amp each other up about it. And I think if you get them one-on-one, they're going to probably hold it together a little bit better. They might take a little more time to ask the questions that they have. So that to me feels a little more humane. But then you run the risk of people texting and saying, hey, I got laid off. Hey, who's next? Right. And then you're inciting a different kind of fear. So there's no good way to do it. There's no good way to do it.
Got it. And then let's talk about this third category, which is part company not meeting expectations of the employee and also potential loss of opportunity, not getting a raise or a promotion, especially if it was already promised before. How do you deal with this?
Well, hopefully no one would promise it before and then go back on their word. Like that's not good leadership. But but for people that are hoping, you know, for whatever they're hoping for, a flex schedule, for more money, for a better job, you know, another opportunity, a rotation in another function, you know, I think people can handle disappointing news. I think the key in this situation is to focus on, and again, I'm not for, oh, I'll just be a cheerleader and you're going to feel good about this. They're not going to feel good about it. But if I feel like they need a sense of agency in that moment. So if you're telling me I'm not promotable for whatever reason, or, you know, I'm not going to get a raise and it's, you know, something performance-based, people mostly want to know what's within their control to make things different so that next time they ask, they get a yes. So just saying no, like you didn't get the promotion, it's not really enough for people, because they want to have some sense of, you know, well, what do I need to change to make that, you know, a better shot next time? So I think being really honest with people. So let's just take the example of you didn't get a promotion. You know, here's the feedback from the hiring committee. You know, they think you're strong in ABC, but you're weak in XYZ. So I would spend the next, you know, year or two working on XYZ. So really give them something that's tangible that they can wrap their head around and go, okay, so I wasn't a total flop in the interview process, but, you know, I've got some weaknesses I need to shore up. That's then when you point them to opportunities that might help them advance in those. So let's find you a mentor that's really strong at these things that you're weak at. Let's get you an executive coach. Let's put you through, you know, a training class that our HR, you know, department happens to have available to you, or send you to some seminar. So there's a way that if you can connect disappointment to feedback and then help them create sort of an action that will move them past that, then they've got hope, right? And hopeless people, no one wants to feel hopeless. That's the worst feeling in the world. We don't want to be rejected. We don't want to be not good enough, and we don't want to not have hope. So if you can give them not false hope, like, don't worry, slugger, next round of trio can, like, you know, be honest with people. But if you can point them in a direction of agency, like, there are things you can do to shore yourself up for the next round, and here are the resources to do that, well, then they have hope and they've got something to do versus just being rejected and they go home and they don't know why. Like, that's the coolest thing in the world for people. And that's the thing I think I see more than anything. So if we're just talking about high level, like people having tough conversations, delivering tough news to folks, the thing that I see is that most of the time, most people pull their punches, they sugarcoat, or they avoid the tough conversation because they don't like how it feels. And then you've got these people walking around going, I don't know why I didn't get the promotion. And they have no idea what to change to make it more feasible next time. They don't, and that's so cruel. So think about how many conversations we have over our careers, thousands and thousands, right? And if at each and every one, people don't give you the honest feedback, you know, you might have 20 years of conversations, of information about you and your performance that you didn't get. How in the world is someone supposed to rise to their potential with all that missing information? They don't, right? They just don't. So I think, you know, that willingness to be courageous and to, you know, really point people toward where they can move forward in their careers, it doesn't feel good. It's not fun. Nobody likes it, but it's so crucial for the other people that we're supposed to be serving. So it's a big shortcoming in organizations that I work with, that I see.
Great. So now I want to ask you some questions that pertain to all three of these. And the first is really around what you were saying, which I think is so fascinating, about how people don't want to upset other people. You don't want to make a situation hostile or confrontational. But that ends up being that most people who are trying to give this feedback are doing a huge disservice to the personal and professional growth of the people that they're talking to. And so it almost seems like one of the things you're saying is that HR, C-suite, employees in general, anyone that's going to give feedback to someone else really needs to understand not only how to give better feedback, but be prepared for potential emotional reactions to deal with as well.
Yeah, and it's not easy. So in particular, oh gosh, I mean, no one enjoys feeling like they hurt or upset someone. I mean, some people do, but that takes a special kind of sicko, right? Like, most of us don't like how that feels, particularly like if men accidentally make women cry, it makes them crazy. It's just hardwired into their brain that they don't want to see that. Like, they don't want to feel responsible for that if they can't fix it. So yeah. So the thing that I try to encourage my leaders to do is to really lean into self-trust. So self-trust to me means I trust that I'm giving this person the most useful information. And believe me, as someone that assesses executives all day, like, they hate my guts sometimes. And and I don't love the way that feels, but it's my job, right? They've got to have the information. So, you know, what I encourage my leaders to do is you've just got to dig deeper into your self-trust than you are digging into the need to make other people comfortable, which means I trust myself to choose the best words that I can choose to get the most useful information to that person, even if it's upsetting. Like, my intent is really to help them always. And then the other part of self-trust is if this person has a meltdown, I trust myself to handle somebody that's having a meltdown without needing to, like, jump across the table and, like, make it all better for them, right? And that's a very, and this is what I see, that's a very codependent streak, is I can't upset you because I've got to take care of you, right? Or, oh, I upset you, I'll take back my words and make it better somehow. Like, it's not your job to take care of that person. Yes, be compassionate. Yes, be thoughtful. but it's not your job to jump across the table, as many of us HR types tend to want to do, and, you know, kiss the boo-boo and like hug them and make them feel better. Like, you've got to trust that they can handle your truth. And if they can't handle it and they have a meltdown, you have to trust yourself to say, well, I can witness a meltdown with and manage through it without feeling like I've got to like make the meltdown stop. Like, if they want to have a meltdown, let them, like, they, okay, you can't stop that. But you have to trust yourself that you can handle something like that. And it's when people are more afraid of the reaction than they are committed to the truth that they hold back. And that's not fair. That's not good leadership.
And then the last question that I have in this section is around the role of tech and how it plays into this. Because it seems as though there's a lot of situations where one could argue some of this bad communication should come as a mass email or text or Slack message to then wrap everybody's head around this bad news if it's something affecting everyone. Or if it's one-on-one, does that mean that it should always be face-to-face or in-person? Because that's too impersonal, since you could have just said, hey, I want to talk to you, whoever this person is. How does tech play into all this? Does it matter how many people you're talking to? Does it matter the severity of the bad news? What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an issue of, you know, what scale are we talking, right? So I think there's just some pragmatic to, you know, we're talking a small round of layoffs and you have, you know, the human capital to go in and have those personal conversations. I just think that's more respectful of the humans that are going through hard things. And I mean, I certainly wouldn't want like a text message telling me I was laid off. I don't know how I'd feel about that. And the legacy impression. So that's where we substitute efficiency for quality. I think, you know, and I'm all for tech, and I think more tech in HR is just going to help them get an even, you know, better seat at the table. So I'm not anti-tech, but I do think some of these, you know, delicate moments are better done, you know, one-on-one, face-to-face. But if you're talking 20,000 people, that may not be possible. So you've got to be sort of pragmatic. But I do think it's important that companies realize that, you know, the way you exit someone from an organization is going to get just as much airtime, if not more airtime, among their network than how you onboard them. And don't even get me started on onboarding. It's done so badly. So you want to be thoughtful in how you exit, you know, your employees, because even if they don't love that they were exited, if you did it in a classy way, you took care of them, you were thoughtful, you were communicative, you were supportive, they will remember that, right? But if they got it via text message, that's not going to leave a great legacy. They might have had a great employment experience and they're devastated to leave because they love working for you. But if you exit them by text message, like, I just think people are going to have a really bad legacy kind of impression of your organization. And again, the networks are so powerful now. I think it's just getting harder and harder to get away with, you know, not doing the best we can for our people and thinking it's not going to catch up to you. Employer brand is everything right now, especially in this economy. So I think, you know, from, you know, first application to, you know, their last day when they're, you know, being asked to go, all of that has to be done in a way that builds the employer brand.
I ask because a lot of the time our personal lives and the way we act personally starts to bleed into the way we work. So for instance, there was a big problem because the way that a lot of people were texting, they would then start writing emails the same way they text, and then that becomes an issue. And so just thinking about how people break up over text message or Instagram or voicemail, I figured we should talk about it, because if people think that that's normal and it's become normalized in their personal life, then letting someone go in a text message potentially could become normalized, and hopefully it doesn't. But as we become less and less formal, I would say, in the way that we communicate, in some places we actually need to be more formal. We wouldn't have so many workplace issues. But as we become to be less and less formal with this, I just figured we should talk about that, because I'm sure none of the HR people here listening would ever do that. But maybe they need to go back to their company and say, hey, if you're ever going to fire somebody, please don't do it through text, because that would be crazy.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's like the disposable dating kind of economy where, yeah, it does get done by text, or they, you know, they ghost you. But I think, you know, as employers, you know, in that, but I don't think as a dating person, like, that person's not going to know the next people that you date. So I don't feel like you have as big of a reputational risk if you're a dating later. But as an employer, all those experiences add up and that becomes your employer brand. So I think, and there is a tremendous value in this talent economy for having a strong employer brand. So I just think if we're just even thinking dollars and cents, how easy is it to get people to come here? Can we recruit A players, B players, or C players? You know, all of that comes from your employer brand. So I think it's worth some pretty good money to maybe not ghost people and fire them by text. Like, be better than that.
All right. So you heard it first on this podcast. If you're going to break up with people on text, that's totally fine. But don't fire people through text. That's bad.
That sums it up.
All right. So now we're going to go into my favorite part of the podcast, which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. Are you ready?
Oh, boy. I'm a little afraid, but go ahead.
Well, we're going to do it anyway. So the real question, do you like to eat bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I don't even know what bread pudding is. And so I think the answer is no.
Whoa, time out. You don't know what bread pudding is?
I don't think so.
All right. If anyone has ever listened to this podcast before, they know I ask this question every time. I'm not going to take the time and bore anyone explaining what bread pudding is. We're just going to talk about it after. And I'll tell you exactly what it is. But your life is about to change.
Really?
All right. Your life is about to change.
I kind of like my life how it is. I don't know. We'll see.
For the better.
Okay.
We'll change for the better. All right. The random question. When you ask where was I from and where we're based, I said Philly. And what was your response? Because I thought that was pretty random.
It was kind of random, but it just happened to be true. Yeah. The only time I visited there, I bought a horse very, very near that city. And I spent like 3 days with him just to like see if he was trainable and smart and athletic. And it's a long assessment process. Obviously it's a big investment. So, you know, I couldn't be with him all day. You know, I'd work with him in the morning and then in the afternoon I didn't have anything to do. So I went and did like, horse-drawn carriage tour through Philly and learned all kind of history, saw the Liberty Bell. And it was really cool. The only time I've been in that part of the country, really.
Nice. I thought your response was awesome. You said, where are you from, Burzo? Where are you based? I said, Philly. You said, oh, yeah, that's where I bought my youngest horse.
Yeah.
You just said it no nonchalant. Like, oh, yeah. You know, have a horse in each state. You know, that was my youngest one in Philly.
That's funny. No, I don't have a whole herd. I just got two. But y'all make some nice horses. I'll say that.
All right. And then the ridiculous question. What do you think is one of the most ridiculous ways you've ever seen a company communicate bad news to their employees?
Ridiculous. I'd say email. Honestly, no, here's what's more ridiculous. More ridiculous is hiding the information. Like, that's the most ridiculous thing to me. But I would say email. I haven't seen a lot of the text, you know, bad things coming over text, but I would say like things that you should either be having a town hall, like look people in the eye for crying out loud. If you're going to make this decision, you better look people in the eye while you're making it. So I think it's and again, I'm really big on technology for HR. I think it's super important for connecting better to our business partners, but just the impersonalization of making it over email or worse, it gets out, you know, kind of through gossip. So for me, it's ridiculous to avoid, you know, these tough conversations, and it's pretty ridiculous to give them an email. I mean, people are it just hurts people. If you're going to have a tough conversation that you know is going to upset somebody, do them the courtesy of staring them in the eye, if that's possible. I mean, sometimes you've got to do phone if you're, you know, halfway across the country and they can't wait. I mean, I understand that, but don't text it. Don't email it. Pick up the phone at minimum. I think, you know, to your point earlier about how casual we've gotten about dating, like, I don't want to see that come into, you know, it's not like you have two dinners and the guy's not going to care, right? No, this is a person that has served you and your organization right. For some number of years. You owe it to them to look them in the eye.
There we go. Final words of wisdom. I love it. Emily, thanks so much for being on the Employee Cycle Podcast.
Woo! You're like my own cheering squad over there.
Oh, I am. And yeah, if this is what you want every day, just let me know. And wherever you enter a room, I'll just be there. Woo, Emily!
I think I just have to create a new position for this. This is great. Usually people are like, oh no, why is the Bob coming? So this is good.
So, Emily, where can people find you and your company online?
Online is Bermes Associates, Bermes Associates. And I'm also on LinkedIn. If you just Google Emily Bermes, again, it's Emily, B-E-R-M-E-S. Just Google me, you'll find me on the web and super easy. And on LinkedIn, and welcome people to connect and share content. And I put a ton of content out. So, you know, welcome people to just follow those two channels.
Awesome. And we'll definitely include that in the show notes. So this has been such an awesome episode, and I'm sure you believed it was awesome as well. And so if you did, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes and anywhere else that you see. You can leave a review because it shows that you care and it shows that we're doing a good job of educating and entertaining you. Also, if this was the first time you've ever listened to the Employee Cycle Podcast because you either found out that Emily was on a podcast and you want to support her, or you just thought that the topic was so amazing and compelling and you needed to listen, but you would also like to get more content, then please subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and any other podcast player you have. And for all you amazingly awesome HR and people ops leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.
This episode of the Employee Cycle Podcast was edited and produced by Lux Podcast Production. Lux is a creative audio suite that helps clients create, market, and measure their show. Visit luxpodcasts.com to learn how a podcast can benefit your organization. That's LUXEpodcasts.com.